Some of you may keep up with the Wells email. How many of you get the Wells email? Okay, that is a pitiful number by comparison to all the people that didn't raise their hand. So I'd encourage you to sign up for the Wells email. Kind of give you an idea of what's going on. Keep you reminded of things that we're doing here at the Well, whether we're getting together to serve the community or whether we're whatever it is. And usually each week, the person who has the privilege of teaching up front will maybe send out like a little bit of a teaser and about what they're going to be talking about. And today, I sent out, or not today, but earlier this week, I incorporated my little window into what we might be talking about today, and it maybe kind of addressed things that dealt with anxiety or interactions or conflict or whatever it is, and I want to kind of dive into that this morning. But before we get there, I want to share a little something that I think is really neat. Obviously, I have a son now. Many of you know that. And so it's made me think about a lot more about how I'm going to raise him. Like, how might I raise him to deal with conflict? How might I raise him to deal to interact with people? Will I raise him to be an angry man, since anger is the only emotion men are allowed to show? How will I raise my son? Well, I have a good friend. His name is Chris. Probably many of you know him, so I won't include his last name. I'll just let you guess, of all the Chris's that you know, which one this might be. And Chris has a son, and Chris's son is huge, all right? Chris himself is a pretty big guy, so there's a clue. And his son was born a very large kid. And by comparison to all of the other kids in his age group, in his class or whatever, this kid is massive. I mean, you'd think he's like 5 or 6 years older than other kids his age. I mean, he is big. And when Chris recognized this, he wanted to make sure that his son did not misinterpret why he was a big kid. And so from a very early age, Chris began to tell his son, "Don't forget, son, the reason you've been given your size is to stand up for people who can't stand up for themselves." When this kid was little and you would ask, "Man, you're kind of a big kid. You're a big guy, huh?" He's like, "Yeah, God made me big so that I could stand up for people." He learned this. This was a part of who he became as he was being taught about life. I mean, you know, he learned a lot of other stuff too, eating and all the other stuff that you have to learn just to make it in life. But Chris was very intentional about making sure his son recognized that the gift that he had been given in size wasn't so that he could be a bully or so that he could lord himself over other people with this gift. It was so that his son would use his gift super intentionally to be helpful. I was so impressed by that. It was like, it was so awesome to me that this little kid was already getting it, that the things he had been given were worth something. Now, I had the same privilege, not necessarily of being taught over and over different things that would be just ingrained to me, but all of us learn differently. Some of you may have experienced some things that have become a part of your life as well. You know, I, at one point, spent some time in Africa, and I was a little short on money, and yet there was this little mission effort that needed to happen while we were there. And so my friend and I, we were kind of discussing, you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to be able to contribute some of our funds to this little mission effort where they need to build this church? I mean, here you got a guy that has nothing. He's got nothing. He brings his only cow to donate so that the church can be built. And Jesse and I mean, we were living okay, and so we were like, "Man, we've got to do this. We've got to give to help this thing." And when we did, I was still kind of lamenting. I have to be honest, I was lamenting it a little bit that we didn't have that much cash with us, and we had given quite a bit to help with this church build. And I was complaining about it to another missionary, and this missionary said to me, "Well, you know, Jason, there is a million worse ways to go broke than being generous." And that, in that moment, that became a part of my life. I mean, it struck me You know, it wasn't something like Chris's kid who had been ingrained to him from a little kid, but when that moment happened to me, I was like, man, that was profound. It became a part of who I wanted to be. My dad said something to me when I was young that kind of began to dictate, I think, my personality to some degree as a youth. I'm going to focus on one word here in case you think we're talking about something else. When I was young and I was starting to kind of become of age, where I was expressing my independence and working in the teenage years, he pulled me aside. He said, you know, as you're growing, I want to remind you of something. I mean, I'm paraphrasing a little bit. He's here, so I don't want him to call me out in front of everybody. He said, Jason, if you need, emphasis on the word need, if you need drugs and alcohol and all these kind of things to have fun, you should save the money you were going to spend on those things, and instead you should buy a personality. And then he threatened to beat me if I did those things anyways, and so it was like, no, I'm just kidding. That moment, that thing, that line, that point, that time became a part of who I was, and I thought, man. And so as I grew, the things that started to want to excite me a lot about life were like traveling and experience and engaging people. And those things did not become part of my landscape as what I thought I needed as a part of my life. And so we find ourselves within the context of moments. I had a boss one time who said to me, you know, Jason, we're all only one poor decision away from undoing every good decision we've made. Well, that was heavy. But I got to thinking about that, and I was like, man, I was a single man working in academies with, you know, a lot of teenage girls running around. He and I were having a heart-to-heart about how to be careful in that environment. And I was like, man, that's true. I have to be ultra intentional about how I, and that became a part of who I was. I had another good friend who said to me, we were talking, it was actually at a school as well, we were talking about discipline. And the dialogue was, man, this kid was doing some things that had become toxic kind of to the community at the school. And we were talking about, can we work with this kid? What do we need to do? And this friend that was there said, you know, I think few people end their lives saying, I wish I had been so much less gracious. And his point to me was that people's regret is almost always, I wish I had been more gracious. And so in that moment, we started to figure out, how are we going to work with this kid? How are we going to get them back? How are we going to win them back? And so that was another moment that became like a part of how I wanted to live. So this morning, what I want you to do around your tables is take a few moments. Maybe it's something you share with somebody else. Maybe it's something that your parents taught you, this pivotal thing. Something that has become a part of who you are, and it's how you live. It's ingrained with you. Maybe it's, in some ways it's very unspoken, or in some ways it's very intentional. But just take a few moments and think, what are some pivotal points in my life? Some phrases, some one-liners, some things that were ingrained to me that have made me a part of who I am. I appreciate you guys sharing with each other for a few moments. I noticed that some tables are very organized, you know, everybody goes around, they say their thing, and then they're done. Some tables are, you know, they add a lot more verbs, express it a little more, so it's tough. Some tables are ready, you know, just a few moments after, and some are probably still talking. So I encourage you, if there's more in your brain about this, reconnect with the people that you've been sitting with, have lunch with them, or even right after the service, launch back in. You know, don't cut it short just because we're kind of doing something here. Continue to make that connection and share these relevant things. And I have to admit, I set you up a little bit, kind of loaded you up with all the positive. I maybe said some things in my life that were very positive that became a part of who I am. with Chris's son, became very positive, a part of who he is. But the truth of the matter is, there's also a lot of things in life that negatively become a part of who we are. Sometimes we're filled with anxiety over potential conflict, or we had a poor relationship, or we didn't have a great relationship with our parents. I mean, there's a ton of stuff that also become a part of who we are that it's necessary for us to carry around. And that's where I want to dive into the script. We're going to get back to the positive as well, but I want to dive into the script a little bit because there's two sides to this thing that make us who we are. Here in 1 Samuel chapter 17, there's a little line that I want to read, and it says this: on hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. So we experience things, sure, we experience things that become a part of who we are, and they bolster us as individuals. They make us better and stronger, but there are other things that when we hear and experience them, they become a part of what terrifies us in life. They become difficult. And so what is going on here? I'm going to take us into a story that many of us, if we've been in church culture for a long time, probably experienced very little. We heard this story, and when I say it, many of you might think to yourself, oh, I've heard this before. Maybe I'll just go. Wait. There may be more. It's the story of David and Goliath. I got to reading this story because, I guess after a while, do you get tired of hearing about bullying? You get tired of hearing about how people get pushed around, how people get picked on. Maybe some of you were a victim. Maybe some of you have been bullies, working to change that, whatever it is. I've been in both camps through my life. There's a group of people who are saying to themselves, on hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. So what's been happening? In chapter 17 here, verse 1, it says, now the Philistines gathered. They were on one side. Saul and the Israelites assembled. They were on the other side. And a champion, verse 4, named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistines' camp. He was over 9 feet tall. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he wore a coat of scale of armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs were bronze greaves. And a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and the iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted, why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. It's kind of an old way of fighting. Two armies would line up, and then one person from each side would come out and fight one another, their best champion, and then that would decide it. That's how it would be over. And so that's what Goliath was saying. These people were terrified because he was a huge bully. I mean, yelling and screaming and saying, hey, you come out and fight me, we'll get this settled. Once it's all over and I smash you, you guys will be our servants, and if it goes the other way, which it likely won't, they'll be your servants. By the way, we still do this. Some of us are just part of the army, though. Some of us are okay to stand back and let somebody else do the bullying for us. I've been in that camp as well, where I see this behavior taking place, and somehow I trick myself into being okay with it. That there's these camps of people, instead of resolution and resolving, it's like, let's fight it out. Let's see who can be the most right. Let's see who can win. But these people are terrified because of this bully. Now, unfortunately for Goliath, Chris was not his dad. Can you imagine a giant like Goliath standing up for people who needed standing up for. Instead of being just a warrior. So he stood and shouted. Then the Philistine said, verse 10, "This day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man, let us fight each other." On hearing that, Saul and the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Now David was the son of Jesse, who was from Bethlehem of Judah. Jesse had 8 sons. And while he was advanced in years, his oldest sons went off to war. David was the youngest, verse 14. And the three oldest, as they went out, David stayed back and tended the father's sheep in Bethlehem. Verse 16. For 40 days, the Philistines came forward every morning and evening and took a stand. For 40 days this went on. This conflict went on for 40 days. Where somebody comes out and shouts and yells, another person is terrified and scared of it. You know, we haven't changed, though, much in thousands of years. It still happens. Nobody was willing to be the voice of reason and say, hey, how do we just make peace out of all this? We're still just as eager as they were back then to stand on two sides of an issue and yell about it and bully each other about it and make each other feel guilty if they don't see it the way we see it. I mean, I realize that's a little bit of a metaphor in terms of what's going on here. But it's just a small scale of what happens. And then when things get out of hand, you go to war. That's how it works when two people aren't willing to sit down and get it worked out. Instead, we have to fight about it. We have to be right about it. Verse 17, now Jesse said to his son David, "Take this stuff, basically. I've got some treats for your brothers. They're out at war. You're tending the sheep. Take some stuff to them, and here's a few things for their unit as well. See how your brothers are, and bring me back some assurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah, fighting against the Philistines." So early in the morning, verse 20, David left the flock with the shepherds. He looked up and set out as directed. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies and ran to the battle lines and greeted his brothers. He was talking with them. Goliath, the Philistines, he came out from his lines and shouted his defiance. And when David heard it, and the other Israelites heard it, they all ran in fear. Now the Israelites had been saying this. Do you see, verse 25, how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his father's family from the taxes of Israel. I'd go and fight right there. No more taxes? Sign me up. Where do I need to go? You just tell me. David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes his disgrace?" So they share with him what they had been saying back and forth to one another. When Eliab, David's brother, had heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down to watch the battle." Have we ever alienated somebody like the brother did to David because we don't understand their perspective? They're unfamiliar to us. We think they don't belong. And some people don't belong. It's difficult sometimes when people are different than us or they're involved in different things than we are. And when they come and try to be a part of who we are, I'll be honest, it's different. It's difficult sometimes for me to shoulder up with somebody who I'm just unfamiliar with, who I don't see eye to eye with, who maybe I even disagree with. I mean, clearly there's something there that is where they're at odds. So David responds. He didn't get too upset. He just says, "Well, now what have I done?" He's, you know, maybe feigning defeat over this. Can't I even speak? He then turned away. Instead of engaging his brother, and I think this is a good bit of advice, you know, the Bible, once again, is a deep social insight into how we can behave. It gives us lessons of things we can avoid and lessons of things that we can make as part of our lives. We can hear them, and in that moment we can say, yeah, that makes so much sense. I want it to be a part of me. David didn't engage him. Instead, he's like, well, this is not why I'm here. I didn't come here to fight. I came here to bring you gifts. So whatever. So he turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, so Saul sent for him. I don't know exactly what David said yet, but David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Your servant will go and fight him. Saul replied, you are not able to go out against the Philistine and fight him. You are only a boy. And he has been a fighting man from his youth. I think sometimes we discredit the individual that we think is, I don't know, uneducated. Or we discredit the individual that we think is not a professional in the thing that we think they should be a professional at, to have a voice to say anything or an ability to do something. You know what I have to come to terms with? I went to school for theology, and there are people who never went to school for theology who are better theologians than me. Fact. There are people who never went to school to do IT, and they are better than some other people who went to school to do IT at ITE stuff, whatever you call it. I mean, there are people who didn't go to school to be dentists. And no, I'm just kidding. Probably you have to go to school to be a dentist. I was just joking, Joel. I saw you over there and I couldn't resist. We see people and we begin to evaluate their worth over something based on what we think is worth something. And if you read further back in the story, you understand that that is not the way God works. God is not conventional like we are. When David was chosen and anointed, God said to Samuel, I mean, you guys see what is on the outside. That is not what I look at. I see the inner portion of the value of people. And really, I think if Samuel was wise, he would have taken that as a chastisement and would have said to himself, well, that's then what I need to be doing. I need to be getting deeper into the core of who somebody is, not being so superficial about my evaluations of them. We discredit people sometimes because of our perspective, not because of what's always real, because we get locked into the conventional, this way of thinking that everybody else agrees with. And that doesn't mean it's wrong. But sometimes we do it without thinking. I will go fight him, David says. You can't. And so then David says this thing, and I like this. This is what I want to bring me back to, like, Chris's son. You're not able to go out. You were just a boy, and he's been a fighting man from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. That doesn't sound, come on. But then he goes on, when a lion and a bear came and carried off the sheep from the flock, I went after it. I struck it and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by the hair and I struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. See, David recognized something in himself. David recognized that from early on, there were things that had become a part of who he was that prepared him for other stuff. He maybe had never fought a man before. But he recognized that the thing that had become a part of who he was important for this situation. He held on to those things and recognized them as a part of his bag of resources, so to speak. He looked back to them and said, these are the things that will benefit me. How will I carry them forward into other situations that have gravity? How will they be a part of who I am? And so Saul hears this. He's like, okay, you've got some confidence. I like it. Let's keep going then. He says this, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So Saul said to David, go and let the Lord be with you. Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. And see, this is where we fall back again into the conventional. He put his coat of armor on him, his bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic, and he tried to walk around, but he was not used to them. That was not a part of who David was. He didn't have the war training that you might need to go out and engage somebody on this battlefield. And so he just admits it. I can't go in these, he says, because I'm not used to them. So he took them off. What was David used to? David was used to this unspoken, unconventional armor that he put on in having the faith of God in his life. Because of my history as a kid, both the experience that I've had and my engagement in God, I am fully ready for this, despite what conventional thinking would say. Well, you're a fool. You're not going into battle with armor? Yes, I am, just not the armor you think is important. You're going into battle unprepared? No, I am, just not with the type of preparation that you think is important. David recognized that his skill set, the things that had become a part of who he was not conventional, but it gave him all the confidence in the world to stand up against bullies. To say on behalf of a whole group of other people, you can stand back there, but I will go out and meet and fix this. It will be done. And so he goes. And so he took off. Then he took off the staff in his hand, and he chose five smooth stones from a stream, and he put them in his pouch, in his shepherd's bag. With his sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. Now, before we talk about the fact that David moves forward, yes, with some experience, but also, and with this unspoken, I mean, there's this unspoken thing. There's a spiritual phenomenon that happens in our lives, a confidence and a readiness that we have when we spend time engaging the spiritual. When we spend time seeking what God has for us, seeking the confidence that God has for us, there's a spiritual phenomenon that happens. But that doesn't mean we go empty-handed into life. I would argue that one of the best things that you can do every day is just be about prayer. Spend some time in prayer every morning. Even at this table, Lord, fill me with something I leave this room with better. I mean, it may be six of the words I've spoken, and that's fine. It could be that moment in time or a little verse that we read through where somebody says to them, man, that is so important to me. I encourage you to seek that spiritual connection. But God also is asking you to prepare yourself. David stopped and he got five stones. And then he goes out to meet Goliath. Now, those five stones weren't conventional. They weren't a sword, right? They weren't a spear. They weren't a shield. But they were still part of what readied him for this interaction. He goes out and he meets the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine with his shield bearer in front of him kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome. And he despised him. He said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David and his gods. Come here, he said, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the fields. I'll tell you what. Too often, people who actually do have the ability to stand up to bullies don't do so because bullies overestimate their abilities, and it makes people underestimate their own abilities. It happens constantly. Being tall doesn't make you a strong person. It just doesn't. Being educated doesn't make you the smartest. It just doesn't. Being good at something doesn't make you the best, and it surely doesn't make you better than other people. One of the great biblical concepts I love is esteem others as better than yourself. We stray so far from that because we're consumed with the visual. How do I look the best? How do I act the best? How do I be the best? I'm a victim. Man, I would hate it if I stepped down today and somebody came and said, you know, what you said didn't make a whole lot of sense, and that may very well be true. But deep inside, my pride would be like, huh, I'm not the best speaker that has ever been born. I said something confusing or something that didn't make sense or something theologically that somebody didn't agree with. It does happen to us. But the problem is too few people are brave enough to take the risk of not being the best and then stand out there in a situation and put it on the line because they're afraid that by being underestimated, it will come true and be a self-fulfilling prophecy. And there's a lot of people in this room who have a fantastic testimony to share that are afraid they might not be the most articulate people in the world. But guess what? That doesn't matter. Don't let that smash the fact that you have a testimony that is so important to you and may in fact be so important to somebody else that it can change someone's life. That you could share with somebody and it be a moment in time that becomes a part of who they become with confidence in the Spirit, confidence in interaction. Don't let the bully, there's metaphoric bullies too. We have social bullies. You know, every magazine that comes out is full of pretty people. Because we look on the outside. And so we have cultural bullies that bully us into some type of submission where we're afraid to look and afraid to speak and afraid to act out and afraid to stand up and afraid to be somebody. David was not this guy. David said to the Philistine, "You come at me with the conventional sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord, the Almighty, with the things that He's given me through life experience, and with these little stones, and the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I will strike you down. Today I will give the carcasses." And then it says this, verse 50, "So David triumphed over the Philistine with his sling." I'm going to throw this back out to you at your tables a little bit today. Some of you in this room may be just like Saul. I mean, Saul was a tall guy. He was like a weaver over here, okay? All right? If we were going to choose a king in this room, we would all choose Jeremy. That's not how they chose Saul, but when they chose Saul, he was a full head above everybody else. If anybody was going to go fight Goliath, it was going to be the other biggest guy, right? But Saul was terrified. He was like any of us who, once we feel disparaged, are now powerless and pitiful. So they could have fought each other. David, though, was willing, even though he wasn't the one that seemed the most conventional. So he carried with him the unspoken, but he also carried with him 5 stones. He did prepare himself with something. And all of us have rich experience. Some of us have great marriages, while some of us have poor marriages. Some of us have great abilities to engage each other in serious conflict and do it while being loving. Others of us are just abrasive. Each and every one of us has things we're good at and probably things that we're very poor at, and it would do us well to glean the resources of those around us to be the best that we can be for every situation, for every Goliath that we meet, whether it's a poor work environment, whether it is a situation at church that we don't agree with, no matter what it is, maybe it's a poor marriage, whatever it is, we can help one another. We can give each other 5 stones. And we can take those 5 stones and we can put them in our resource bag so that wherever we find ourselves, we have the abilities, we have the experience, we have the unspoken. Now, first of all, you're not going to be overly successful if you don't carry the unspoken with you. If you are not spending time in the faith of God, all the resources in the world will sometimes not make you successful. So I implore you, carry that unspoken with you. Begin to make it a part of your life. Make it real to you. Take that moment, whatever it is, whether it's something your dad said, and start to make that a part of the landscape. You carry that unspoken with you. And then you start to carry the spokens with you. The advice that people give. The one-liners, the experience. So I'm going to kick this back out to you. I want you to take some time at your tables here for the next few minutes. And just talk to one another. Now, I've got a Goliath in my life that I'm terrified of. You know, obviously I'm encouraging you to be careful. Maybe this is not the time when you want to tell the rest of the family that you have a problem with me, okay? All right? Just a warrant. No, I'm just... Maybe you want to be careful, but I'm encouraging you to lay your heart on the table and say, this is what I'm struggling with, and you people around me could help me with the resources that I need to be bold enough to figure it out and to fix it. I'm going to give you that. Find your 5 stones. Start carrying that spirit with you. Find your 5 stones at your tables right now. Just start talking about some real stuff. Figure out if there's advice. Figure out if you're not a good listener and somebody needs to tell you, hey, you need to listen better. Just for the next few minutes, talk about some of those things.
Heavenly Father, we appreciate the words of the script that remind us that there were men who failed, men that were successful, women who failed, women who were successful. And we ask that you'd help us to glean the resources that we need to be bold people, to live out and stand up, to live out our own witness. We thank you for the story of David and Goliath and for the example of David in this situation, where we can be bold by having spent time in the Spirit and by filling our lives and gleaning the resources that we need to live out in faith. Thank you for our friends that we can share with and that we can dialogue with and support one another. Help us to be great people in our community, in our families, in our workplaces. We ask for your Spirit in our lives to be able to do that. In your name, amen.